Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST.net. We're doing Baltimore Positive. We are at State Fair in Catonsville. The top dog, as I like to say, the good doctor, Dr. Freeman Rabowski with us, and former Baltimore County Executive Don Mullen. So Dr. Rabowski and I were jamming a little bit during the break, and I remembered the three topics from part one, and this is now episode 13. This will be the best episode, because I've always wanted to talk to you, and like now I got the first thing you talked about with education.
Right.
Was citizenship.
Yes.
And this is, and I'm going to continue to go back to this again and again, Don. Right. I think we are lacking. There were two things. Citizenship and respect was the other word you used. We had a couple of police officers in here 2 weeks ago, and I asked them, what could make Baltimore better? And they first bit their lip because they know Don, and they know Don's boss is their boss, and so they don't want to say any, because everybody's afraid of getting Mary Bubala, right? Everybody's afraid of what they might say.
Sure.
So They turned the corner here, and then they came back. The one officer came back. He said, I got an answer for you. I said, well, do tell. He said, respect for everybody, respect. Yeah. And the citizenship side of this is that I don't even think people know what's in the Constitution or what's in the Bill of Rights or what is a law or how. And certainly from what I see in the city, people breaking laws, they don't know they're breaking the law. They don't even believe they're breaking the law. We're not even enforcing laws.
Right.
So citizenship, you talked about that. I think that that's where all of this has to begin, as I saw another angry tweet from our president about Russian association. You know, that's what I wake up to every morning, and I'm thinking, this is the lead citizen. You're the top dog, right, over at UMB. You're the guy, you're the standard bearer for everything that happens under this hat. And I think in our country, citizenship, I think we need to go back there to the beginning, and that maybe start with you in Birmingham, right?
I was very, very, very blessed. First of all, I have wonderful Christian parents, hardworking parents who worked 5 jobs between the two of them.
Mm.
And so at the foundation, when we think about citizenship, we think about what are the lives of people. And is a child growing up in a family where he or she gets the support, the love? And that can only happen if people have good jobs. So all those things go together. You know, for me, and I, you don't push things on other people, but I know in this country, people I know who've done well have had somebody in that house who gave them support, literally from the beginning of their lives. And so we have two challenges. One, to help families to be stronger. Two, to help people to have the skills to get jobs. Three, to help those children who are not fortunate to be in a healthy environment, where they're in a community where they see people being killed or whatever. How do we do that? So our choice program, we work with 500 little children who are first-time offenders. And we work with them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All right, we've been doing it 30 years. We've served 10,000 families. And so this is the choice program. Somebody looks up the UMBC choice
Everyone program. Everyone on my Facebook said, you better ask him about the choice program.
Yeah.
Because if you don't ask him, he's going to talk about
that's
it anyway.
Right. That's exactly right, because we believe in those children. And you bring those children to UMBC, and they see kids from all races working together,
now,
studying.
How old are these children?
These children are between 8 and 17.
Okay.
Heavily boys of color, but some of the white kids, some girls, heavily boys of color, as we see the ones who are being literally with the violence and being killed in our communities, not just Baltimore and D.C., we have in the country. So we've been doing that 30 years. And what's significant about that is we've helped so many of them not go back into the system and to get some skills so they can get a job. You cannot take care of your family if you don't have skills and a job. All right. So fundamentally, you start there. We've got to work on those problems of the challenges of our families, of our values, of the notion of skills to get the job. And then when somebody is able to take care of his or her family, then you can really help them understand, well, now, beyond having money for food, what's important in life? It is that we are in a democracy, that we are here to support each other, that the public good for all of us, best for all of us, right? And that we have the right to vote, you know? And I always tell the story of my grandmother who had to take a Alabama literacy test, and she had to pass it 2 or 3 times. She had to work on it because unlike whites who could just sign their names with an X even, blacks had to pass this test in small towns. And I'll always be inspired by her working with 2 of her women friends to figure out these questions, bring them back, and study the Constitution as 6th grade educated people. And so when she came in that house back to Birmingham, and she looked at me and said, I'm now a voting citizen. She was 70 years old.
Wow.
So I always say, how dare people not vote?
That was the first time she ever voted?
She had tried so hard for years, okay? So
What year are we talking about?
This was in the early 60s.
Okay.
And wait a minute, this month, in June, 100 years ago, was the first time that Congress passed a law for women of all races to vote. So we have to tell that story that people, that women of all races could not vote before then. It was ratified in 1920, so we'll be celebrating it next year. But it was this year that Congress grappled with that. Should women, can you imagine that idea? So I tell you that because we need people to understand people haven't always had these rights that they have today. And that unfortunately, when you've got children who get into difficulty and get felonies right now, they have a problem. They can't vote. You know, in most places, I mean, some places are changing it. So the idea of the values we have for our society and believing in our children and our families seems to me at the heart of what we need to be doing.
Well, tell us, it was so much there. You're right, Nestor. We could go on all day. We'll come back to your Birmingham roots. But I want to stay with this choice program for a minute or two.
Yes.
So you take these young folks from 8 to 17. Mm-hmm. Tell us. What happened?
Yes.
Describe the program
because
people hear it.
Yes.
It's not unlike to me.
Yes.
Meyerhoff.
Meyerhoff
was great, but now we'll talk about we've shown that Meyerhoff.
And where did it come from,
too?
I always want the genesis. Choice, so your idea?
Right. No. Choice started with Mark Shriver.
Okay.
Mark Shriver was living over in Cherry Hill, working on a program to help first time offenders. So we give him credit for that, number one. Number two, his father, Sarge Shriver, called my boss at the time, Adam Yamalinsky, because they had both been part of the Kennedy Whiz Kids back in the 60s.
This is a Sarge Shriver that owned the Orioles, that was a part of the
Kennedy's
good family.
Yeah. Started the Peace Corps.
That's right.
That's my sports element, Doc.
Yeah, he was married to the wife of John Kennedy,
right.
You know, to Kath. And what's interesting
Camelot.
Is that, yeah, yeah. So here's the deal. This is the point. So we were able to go over to Cherry Hill, talk with him and people about bringing that program to UMBC back in the late 80s. And they questioned whether or not this predominantly white school would take care of their kids. And I had spent 10 years in the inner city at Coppin State and just said, we're not politicians. We're not here to promise anything. We're here because we care. Mm-hmm. You know, why else would we be here? So you just have to be real with people. And they said, we'll give you a chance. And that was 30 years ago. And what we do is it's an intervention program that focuses on a 24-hour supervision. Literally, we make sure they're up in the morning, in school during the day. We bring them on campus in the evenings. They have studying and recreation. We take them home, and we make sure they stay at home at nighttime. Okay? And we do that over a sustained period of time. The state.
What happens when they break the rules? That's always where.
Yeah. But there are children who are unable to remain in the program. The judge will say to this child, when the child has committed something, you have a choice of going to jail or being in the UMBC Choice Program.
Wow.
So there's a major sense of authority.
That's the choice part.
Yes, the choice part.
That's the choice part.
You go to jail, you come to the UMBC program.
So they come, and it's amazing. I should be more familiar with this program. I actually am embarrassed that I don't know more about it.
Right.
So when they come, what's their length of stay? Describe how it works.
So remember,
I'm a 7-year-old. What happens to me?
You're eight and older, and towards the early
teens. And when you're
8,
this is your parents are incarcerated or
whatever, or with challenges, and it's always.
Are you considered a child with a challenge at that point, or are you considered an orphan?
No.
These are children that are doing wrong things at 8 years of age.
They unfortunately have gotten into the wrong habit. Mm-hmm. Usually, it's something about drugs. They are not. These are not violent children.
Not violent. Okay.
These are non-violent crimes.
Okay, fair enough.
And let me just say, we've had the program on campus 30 years. We've never had a major incident. You give children structure and love. Now, remember, they go home at night, but we have students who work with them. Lamar Davis was the director. Eric Ford is now the director. And so many of our colleagues, so many of these young staff members and students work with these children every day.
Do they come there? Is that where their school is?
They're in schools around the area. Some are at Lakeland Elementary where we do things and all these schools. So they work. And so the idea that some people will say, why are you doing this? Because we need to be a part of the community. So we work with students who are the first-time offenders, these nonviolent children. We work with a lot of children in math and reading. You go to Lakeland Elementary, and now there's a zone of schools there where we work with all these kids and bringing them up to the state average. Only about half of the state kids are at proficiency in reading and math. You know that for minority children, the numbers, the percentages are much lower. So for our kids who are Latino and black and white, who are often with free lunch, we are bringing them up to that level and working to do even more with that. So it's very important. But other kinds of programs for women, for girls in technology, we have great middle school programs for girls in computing and coding. right? Because we've got a problem in our country with not enough women in computer science, in cyber. We were the national cyber champions in 2017, so we are hot in cyber. But the other side of that, beyond that, is that we're one of the lead partners to the National Security Agency. We are.
Well, you're on the doorstep.
Yeah, yeah. And we have part of what they do on our campus and our research park. And what's most important is that we've got we're one of the leading producers of talent for the National Security Agency. We've got over 1,100 of our graduates there in computer science and cyber and in mathematics. You know, NSA is the biggest employer of mathematicians in the world. So they look to us for talent in the same way that companies in the area, from Northrop Grumman, we do a lot with Northrop Grumman. Northrop Grumman is a major citizen of this community. Let me say that. Northrop Grumman works with us with Lakeland Elementary. They've given us funds to work with them for a STEAM center. The engineers go over there and work with those children. All right, and then they give us work money from cyber scholars, minorities, women, and people of all types. So they hire lots of numbers of our graduates, 50 to 100 a year. So they are a perfect example of what a corporate citizen should be in the Baltimore region.
Dr. Freeman Rabowski here, former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler with us. We're at State Fair in Catonsville doing Baltimore Positive. Can I move on to this here? All right. First, there goes my hero. Is not in the shots. Every week I got to get that because we're saving lives here today, Doc. we're swabbing for the bone marrow registry. My wife's a 2-time survivor of leukemia, and a nice man in Germany saved her life twice. But so you said something that was interesting to me during the break. He thought I was 28 years old. I think he's buttering me up. No, I had to call my ID.
Yeah.
I shaved this morning for you, Doc. Yeah. I mean, you would have seen all the silver coming out yesterday. Sports and what I've done, over all these years. And seeing parades and I gave you a copy of my book of the Ravens.
Yep.
Your campus in sports and bringing people together.
Yes.
I still can't think of anything in our city that brought people together the way the Ravens did a couple of years ago.
Sure.
In modern times, black, white, east, west, rich, poor, educated, working, not whatever.
Sure.
On your campus.
Right.
I'm wearing the hat.
Right.
I've known Pete forever.
Yeah.
I go back to Tom Sullivan and Monica DeCandolo back in the 90s and friends of mine through the years and championships, your lacrosse program, the whole deal.
Sure.
I would say that moment when I was unfortunately leaving a hockey game where you guys were up 30 points and I thought, well, by the time we get to 8 minutes, the game will be tight
because
you're a 30-point underdog and this 16's never beaten a one.
Right.
And in the modern era, we can watch the game right on the phone.
Yeah.
So I didn't need to go to a sports bar. My wife just popped the phone up, and there we are watching. I'm like, we're going to have to pull over at some point and pay attention to this game. Because this game, I never had – we drove home. We celebrated in the car. I'm tweeting while we're moving. What a night. What a weekend.
Right.
And as much as you've put all these incredible doctors and God bless you, Johnny O, you're not the basketball team. You're not March Madness. Sports has been a fun part, and Pete Carinci with the Final Four.
Sure, in soccer.
And my wife was fighting for her life when that happened, when we were in the Final Four.
Is that
And my wife and I watched the game on the laptop at the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah, because you streamed it.
Yeah, man.
So my support was with you.
But when
I think of UMBC and the sports part of that, that's how... A couple days after you won the basketball game, I was walking through Disney World in the shirt that Pete had given me.
It was
yellow UMBC.
Sure.
It was soccer.
Sure.
Of course it was soccer.
Sure.
Pete.
Yeah.
And everywhere I went at the Magic Kingdom, everyone went, UMBC! And I'm like, 2 weeks ago, if I would have worn this shirt,
they
would have said, where is that? Is that Missouri or is that Montana?
I will tell you, when we won, and Pete, and going to the Final Four was amazing. UVA beat us by 1 point, and I said, they've got $9 billion. We are an amazing my God, they've got and they beat us by 1 point, right?
They had Thomas Jefferson.
And they had Thomas Jefferson in 200 years, right? You know, so you think about that, and that is great. But then you look at what we did with basketball and how we made history. Wherever I go today, whatever university, whatever company, when they introduce me, they say, that's the place where the number 16 seed beat the number one seed. They always
say
that.
Do you try to tell them you sunk a three at some point in the game or no?
No, I'm the nerd. I am the mega nerd. Let's be very clear. I do math, all right? Let's just be very clear about that. I'm not going to claim that. But what I will tell you is that even during that period when the New York Times wrote an article and said, some people don't know UMBC, they said, but Harvard and Stanford and MIT know them well. They know them well. All right. There's the point for parents that it's the best education you can get in the country. I mean, that's I say that. I have a chance to teach up at Harvard. I get a chance to meet 75 presidents a year and work with them. And I will tell you, I tell them all, nobody has a better education from science to humanities than UMBC.
Then I want to pick
and
up
and those
on
basketball
that.
Players are really good students. That's the other point. We had two of them that were 4.0s, all right?
Wow.
So you can talk about the great basketball, great coach, and they're all serious students.
You have no idea how close I came today to wearing my Jay Green jersey, okay? Jay knows about this, all right? I got a Jay Green shirt the day he was senior day.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
gave
yeah,
the shirts
yeah.
out. And so I had, it's the only black
That's
one I have.
Funny.
I have a black shirt with the gold on it. And, you know, it doesn't have your current sponsor
right,
on it. So
right.
I have refrained.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Due to restrictions.
Sure,
you
know? Sure, sure. I appreciate
but,
that.
But you just talked about, and boy, it's hard to say you even came more to life because you're, a, as you know, a force of nature anyway. But you really lit up when you said, it's the best. And
oh,
you
yeah,
pointed,
yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
the best education.
Oh, bar none.
So you can't look up a biography of Freeman Wrubowski where it doesn't say, he took this sleepy commuter school and turned it in to this world-class university in 30 years. We're interested in leadership.
Sure, sure, sure.
So
sure.
how does someone take this sleepy commuter school and turn it into this world-class university?
Sure. First of
Talk
all,
about that process.
Let me just say, I'm so fortunate to have been at UMBC since it was 20 years old. But even in the first 20 years, let me stop and say there were a lot of alumni who got a great education and went on to be teachers and doctors and lawyers and social workers and artists and all. So the idea of sleepy may mean people didn't know about it, but they were doing good stuff even then, all right? But number two, here's my most important point. I've got a new book coming out with my colleagues, and the first sentence in the book is this: it's not about me. It's not we've got to get away from the idea that leadership is about one person. No, it's about a lot of people. People have given their lives at UMBC to make it what it is today. I am so blessed to have been a part of that, but it is not about me. And everybody gives me credit for it, and I'm saying, no, without all these people giving so much to the institution every day, faculty and staff and the alumni and the business community. So when we can think of our country or our university as being about shared leadership, broad leadership, you see, then we go to the next level. Because one person leaves, one person dies, one person makes a mistake, and all of a sudden we think, oh my God, what's happening? No. I don't care whether or not we want honorable leaders, yes, but the leaders should be not just the one person, but the teams of people who come together to make things happen. We've got to get the country thinking that way.
Isn't that interesting, Nestor? You know, Dr. Wrubowski, we're developing. There are themes that are developing, really, really solid themes when we interview people, whether it's Dutch or whether it's Senator Mikulski or Leo Krum.
Sure.
And one of those themes, and Senator Mikulski, Dutch talked about teamwork.
Sure, yeah.
You know, you've been around Dutch enough. Teamwork.
And Ryan Odom was here, he talked about teamwork.
Yeah.
Peter Ingram was here, he talked about teamwork. You know?
And Senator Mikulski was crystal clear.
Sure.
She said, we always joke, she said she's not into nostalgia at all. She calls it no-stalgia.
Yeah. Right.
But she said, in talking about the city, and in the next segment, we're going to talk a lot about the city. She said, remember, Nestor, she said, we've got to stop waiting for Superman or Superwoman.
That's right. That's
it's
right.
about the community.
Sure,
the neighborhood.
Sure,
about the collective.
That's right. That's right. And that's at the city, the county, the state level. And I want to give the governor credit for supporting higher education. I've got to do that. He supported my campus. He supported the other campuses. He believes in education. And we're one of the few states in the country where you can see Republicans and Democrats working together. And we need to highlight that as we talk about what happens in our country. I think it's very important because that pulls in more people. And I would say this to you, whether talking about the elected officials, Ben Cardin, Barbara Mikulski, Chris Van Hout, we've got great elected officials at the national level. Dutch, our own kind of executive from before, great guy, really at the height of intelligence in our country. And he works to bring all of us into that work. So we need to strengthen our approach to talking about what's best about Maryland and about Baltimore.
You know, we should mention we've had Delegate Eric Ebersole stop by today.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, absolutely. And he wears jeans, so I would vote for him.
We've got Councilman Tom Quirk staff here.
I love it.
So we've got local and state government representatives. You said we're really fortunate to have these elected officials.
And it's not every day that a state delegate, taught mathematics. So we know he knows.
All right. So before we go to a break here, I want to keep the segment whole because I know he's going to take you down memory lane. He's going to go nostalgia with you, even though, because that's who he is. I mean, he's, you know. Recruiting people. people to Baltimore, the more I've talked to people, and you know, we're partners over at Coppin State. We do all their sports programming. We've done things with you in the past. We've done things with Towson in the past. Hope to do them again in the future.
Sure.
No one loves UMBC more than me. But in recruiting to the city, and I've talked to folks over at Coppin, I've talked to folks in Morgan, even at Towson, Hopkins, certainly, you know, with the issues in the news there. Sure. The word Baltimore, and this is where this whole thing has started with Baltimore Positive, is no one loves Baltimore more than me. I lived at the Inner Harbor for 16 years. Yes. It's been my life. I've worked at the newspaper. Sure. The pride of the Ravens, the Orioles, these Baltimore things, as it says, Baltimore, we got to get back. We got to get that moving. Yes. And that's part of your name, too. That's the B in the UMBC. And I think when you tell a 16-year-old girl's parents that you're going to send her to Baltimore or Nashville, Baltimore, or New York, Baltimore, or wherever.
Sure.
We got to fix Baltimore, and that's where how this whole thing got started.
Sure.
Tell me how that does affect you.
Sure.
That when you get off a plane and meet someone from Wichita, and they say, "Oh, Baltimore, the Wire."
Right.
That's what I hear.
Right.
Not crab cakes, Cal Ripken, the Inner Harbor, the things I used to hear, the things I'm used to hearing the first 40 years of my life. And that worries me for all of it. It certainly worries me when my home's for sale and people say downtown, can't live there.
Right.
The Orioles are downtown. They play downtown. I don't want to go downtown.
Right.
And that's affecting all of us.
Sure.
And that's a reality. That's a weed in our garden. We got to fix.
But let me say this. But the most important thing you said is it is a garden. There are weeds, but it is a garden. What do I mean by that?
Roses grow.
I know so many families that are trying to get into UMBC, trying to get into Hopkins, trying to get into the University of Maryland, Baltimore. When the brand is strong, and the brand for higher education in Maryland and in this region is very strong, whether they're talking about going to Towson, whether they're talking about going to UMB, trying to get into med school and law school, for example, or Hopkins or UMBC and many other places, fact is the brand is strong, and you've got families from all over the country and the world coming to Baltimore because of the strength of higher education. And I don't think people in Baltimore realize just how much of a magnet we are. I was up in upstate New York this weekend speaking at Hamilton College, and I had families come up to me and say, "My kid's at UMBC."
Wow.
A young woman comes up and she says, "The provost at Washington Lee in Virginia, you know, that the provost, that son is here." You know, we've got people from all kinds of families, from the ambassadors in D.C., at UMBC, at Hopkins, at UMB, more than people realize. People know that higher education is very strong here. They really do. And what people don't know, even when talking about minorities, the number one city for educated blacks in the country is D.C. What do you think the number two city is? It's Baltimore.
Not Atlanta. I would have given
it's
Atlanta.
No, it's
nobody
not
would know that, Doc.
They don't. And the Brookings Institution study said it. The largest percentage of educated blacks beyond D.C. is Baltimore and this region. You know, so we are the best educated in the country. We have our challenges, and we need to face those, right? Whether it's with a choice program, we know we got to deal with the violence issue. I believe this new
mayor. I guess my point is it's going to be very hard to keep our education institutions at that level if the brand of Baltimore isn't as attractive as the brand of Hopkins as a hospital and a university or UMBC or crab cakes or the other awesome stuff.
I agree completely.
We call this the land of pleasant living when you came here.
And let me say to you, but Hopkins has always been number one among hospitals, all right? You know, when you look
at my wife's life twice.
Even during the difficult times, people know Brand. UMBC has never had a problem with enrollment. So many people want to be at UMBC, you know, and we're working to accommodate as many as we can, right? And so what I would say is that, we're going to support these elected officials in the city. You got a new strong mayor who's determined to do the right thing. We've got a new Baltimore police chief. We've got strong institutions. When you look at places like T. Rowe Price and McCormick, I know both well, they are the brand. They are the gold standard in world-class companies. And they are attracting people from all over the world to come here. But they work around the world, all right? They've been in one in the 1880s, one in the 1930s. These kinds of companies, everybody believes in a T. Rowe. Everybody believes in the spice from McCormick. That's Baltimore. That's problem. We've got to talk about that. We've got to be like the Texans.
We just did. We are.
That's why we're here.
McCormick, people don't understand, and I know we're running over in this segment.
Sure.
People
There's
don't
no
understand.
Thing.
We were directly involved.
Yeah.
That McCormick can be any place in the world. Yeah, forget the United States. Yeah. They don't need their corporate headquarters to be out here in Hunt Valley and be part of the Baltimore region. So I love when Dr. Babasky, you and Nestor talk about Baltimore as a garden. Yeah. I think it's a great place to stop
here. By the way, so I wrote this down. Structure and love is what Dr. Freeman Babasky says. Structure. Sure. So he's the structure. I'm the love. All right? Baltimore Positive, WNSD, we're at State Fair in Catonsville with President Dr. Freeman Babasky. We're back for more from The Ville right after this. That's